Everybody, it seems, is happy to give you advice on how to cut words out of your writing. Take a phrase like each and every day and replace it with every day. And that's a good revision, don't get me wrong. But if you look in much of the prose that is technical or scientific, you'll have a hard time finding that phrase. You will find this phrase, though, quote, in this paper we show, unquote. And you could replace that phrase with here we show. But if you really want to shorten your text and communicate more clearly, you'll need to work much harder than that. You'll need to identify what readers can infer from your text, and therefore what you don't have to write or explain. And that means you'll have to build a model of your reader or audience as active. In the rest of this podcast, we'll explore some techniques for helping those active readers make sense out of what you've written. Hi, my name is Roger Graves. I'm the Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning and the Director of Writing Across the Curriculum at the University of Alberta. I'm also a professor in English and Film Studies. I'm on Twitter at Roger Graves, and you can email me roger@wecanwrite.ca or graves1@ualberta.ca. What I'm going to be talking about in this podcast is based on some of the work that we've done in a book that we published called A Strategic Guide to Technical Communication. So you might want to look in chapter 4 of that book to get a more elaborate explanation of these concepts. In the last several podcast episodes that we've published, we've been looking at different kinds of aspects of style. And particularly, we were working with the concept of the plain style in the last couple of weeks. Also looking at the middle style, or the high or florid style, which is often called Florida. So what I want to take a couple of minutes here is to take a look at the high style, because we haven't really talked about that. A medieval rhetorician called Erasmus wrote a book called De Copia, in which he helped his students, people reading his text, to understand how to embellish or amplify their writing in order for it to have greater impact. And so one of the exercises he had them do was to write the very same sentence in a bunch of different ways. So here's an example. Your letter mightily pleased me. To a wonderful degree did your letter please me. Me exceedingly did your letter please. By your letter was I mightily pleased. I was exceedingly pleased by your letter. Well, that's probably enough of that, but you get the idea. And sometimes you'd have them write up to 100 different versions of a particular sentence in order for the students to examine and figure out all the different ways that they could use language to accomplish the same task. Well, let's take a little look now at an academic article to get a feel for how the high style comes across in some academic writing. So here's a quote from an article called Biopolitics, Fascism, Democracy, Some Reflections on the Discourse About Modernity. It's a historian writing. The biomedical sciences play a crucial role in this model of modernity. What Ulrich Herbert, among many others, called the biologicalization of the social appears here as a, often the, central defining characteristic of modernity. This focus reflects the centrality of Darwinist evolutionary theory to the scientific faith of the entire period from the 1860s to the Third Reich. Darwinism naturalized, so to speak, the modern's belief in the possibility, or inevitability, of progress. I'll just stop there. The excerpt that's in the slides goes on for another minute or so, and I don't want to devote that much time to it, but what I want to draw your attention to is these interruptive phrases, among many others, often the, so to speak. And this person who's writing this puts those in deliberately to interrupt themselves and to give more of a sense that they're talking with you in a conversation. These are features of the high style, where it's involved, it's not a direct plain style, which is direct and to the point. And that's in some fields in academia, that's understood as really good writing. Other fields don't think it's that good. So what you have to do if you're writing in your field, you need to figure out which kind of field are you in. Are you a historian? In which case you do want that high style, those aspects of it. Many humanists are in that kind of a field. Or are you in more of a technical field that doesn't prize that and wants more direct texts, which are also more concise? Well, having explored the high style a little bit, getting some sense of how much you can amplify texts, let's take a look at clarity. And let's think particularly about readers and clarity. So why is it that clarity is so difficult? Well, first of all, some readers don't just read prose, they interpret it. They examine the prose structures to identify your or the writer's main ideas. They assemble a pattern of ideas which becomes the meaning of the sentence for them. They then link the ideas from sentence to sentence and from paragraph to paragraph in order to build an understanding of what the sentence and then the paragraph and then ultimately what the whole text is about. But this is all done very actively. And the key thing here is that there are ways in which you can structure your sentences to enable them to do this quickly and accurately. And so that's your job here. The first technique I want to talk about is under the heading of cohesion, and it refers to putting the subject of your sentence at the front of your sentence rather than burying them towards the end. So here's an example. In the past, various techniques have been used to deposit a film or coating on a substrate located in a vacuum chamber. Sentence two. One technique, and so you see the idea that the phrase various techniques is repeated at the start of the next sentence where it says one technique. If you continue on to a third sentence and say another technique is referred to as chemical vapor deposition, then what you've got is three sentences all having techniques in the first for the subject part of the sentence, in the first part of the sentence. And what that does then is the reader understands this paragraph is about techniques. They can't not understand that. It enables them to read more quickly and also to be certain about what it is you're trying to tell them. A variation on this is where you're linking the end of a sentence to the start of the next sentence. And by doing that, they just finish reading about something, then the next sentence picks up on that same topic. And this enables them to have a sort of a consistency of understanding of what you're talking about. So here's the example. There are no universal guidelines for the level at which glucose intolerance should be labeled as gestational diabetes, making the diagnosis of gestational diabetes controversial. Currently, for a diagnosis of gestational diabetes, the criteria, and so it goes on, but what you have at the end of that first sentence is, the diagnosis of gestational diabetes is controversial, and then the start of the next sentence says, currently, for a diagnosis of gestational diabetes. So you can't not understand that what you just finished talking about is now picked up in the next sentence and now elaborated on. And so that pattern that you're establishing here really helps readers understand what you're trying to tell them. Here's another technique. Put the subjects and the verbs of your sentences close to one another in the sentence. Don't separate them by long phrases or clauses. So here's the example where it's not done well. A method for the reactive plating of substrates to produce transparent conducting films and photoactive coatings is disclosed. So what you want to do is revise that so it reads this way. A method is disclosed for the reactive plating of substrates to produce transparent conducting films and photoactive coatings. Here's another thing to pay attention to. The point of emphasis in a sentence is at the end of the sentence. So you want to place important ideas at the end of the sentence in order to emphasize them. So here's an example. Obesity is increasing at unprecedented rates worldwide. Now that sentence emphasizes the scope of the problem by putting worldwide at the end of the sentence. So because it's at the end, that's where you get this emphasis. And if you were speaking this, you'd often hear someone's voice go up at that point. If you revise that this way and put, obesity worldwide is increasing at unprecedented rates. Now in that sentence, because unprecedented rates is at the end, that becomes a thing you focus on, that the sentence becomes about the rate of increase and not about the scope of it geographically. So in addition to linking sentences to increase coherence and to putting the emphasis at the end of a sentence, here's another idea. Limit your sentences to one point. Place one point in each syntactic structure or unit containing a subject and a verb. Here's the example. Highly transparent conducting zinc oxide films have been deposited using ion beam assisted reactive vacuum deposition. Now that's a load to understand, but by just limiting it that one thing to the sentence, you're helping your reader your way through it and understand what you're trying to tell them. Here's another technique. You want to really focus on the verbs that you're using, and you want to avoid turning those verbs into nouns. From a grammatical perspective, we call this nominalizations, where you take a verb and you make it into a noun. You write validation instead of validate. So validates the verb. You've made it into a noun by writing validation. So kind of what you want to do is look through your own text, maybe do a search and replace for words which end in T-I-O-N. And in that way, you'll be able to see how many of those there are in there. You'll be able to figure out, are those nouns really the main verb of what I'm trying to say in the sentence? Well, most of those techniques we've just been talking about really focus on clarity and getting your writing to be clear to your reader. Let's now transition and think about conciseness. And here are four actions, four different ways in which you write that can make your writing more concise. Number one, delete meaningless words. Here's the example. The Queen Elizabeth Islands, located in Canada, contain approximately 14% of the Earth's glacier and ice cap area. Not much snow accumulates on these glaciers, and the overall amount of snow varies very little from one year to the next. You could revise that to take out located in, take out not much, take out the overall amount of. Here's the revised sentence. Canada's Queen Elizabeth Islands contains 14% of the Earth's glacier and ice cap area. Snow accumulation on these glaciers is low and varies little from year to year. Technique number two, delete what readers can infer. Here's the first example. One of several approaches to detection error that has been widely adopted is that of multiple site surveys. In this type of approach, an n-mixture approach is used to estimate detection error for count data. Those two sentences can be revised into one sentence that says, one widely adopted approach to error detection is multiple visit surveys that use an n-mixture approach to estimate detection error for count data. The key point here is that approach has been widely adopted is something that you can say that the readers can figure that out. They can infer that, so you don't need to say it. Technique number three, readers expect subjects to contain some kind of actor in the story. So here's a short paragraph in which the actor is state-space models. So let me read this to you. Recently, state-space models have been used to accommodate observation error, also called measurement error, and missing values in ecological analyses. A state-space model consists of two components, a stochastic model for unobserved population abundances and a stochastic model for the observation error. State-space models provide a flexible framework for estimating parameters of the population growth models in the presence of process variation and observation error. That's a bit of a lengthy text, but the key thing is that at the start of each sentence, you're getting state-space models. Each of those sentences begins with that. And what that means is that they understand that that model, those state-space models, are the actor. They're the thing that the paragraph is about. Well, thanks very much for listening. I hope that these strategies that we've talked about might be useful to you. It's kind of hard to pick them all up in a podcast just by listening. So if you want to consult the slides on that, they'll be on wecanwrite.ca. If you go to the podcast page, you'll see a link there to the slides.